Hello, everyone. My name is Mike Kacharik. I appear to moderate this wonderful panel of managers today. So thanks, everyone, for the great turnout. I was 11 years at Google. Most recently, about 7 months ago, I switched to Facebook. So I have some perspective on both companies. It's my pleasure to talk about that and sort of represent these folks by asking them questions. So I am going to ask for questions from the audience as we go on. I'd first like to apologize for a change in attendees initially. Blake Scrivener from Netflix unfortunately turned ill today. So I think it was just an excuse to stay home and watch House of Cards, which, as I understand, he was a little bit behind on. So hope he's getting his rest. And instead, we have two replacements here who I will tell you about. So the first person I'd like to welcome is Liz Fong Jones from Google. Liz is a senior site reliability engineer at Google. She manages a team of SREs responsible for Google storage systems. She lives with her wife, Metamore, and two Samoans in Brooklyn. In her spare time, she plays classical piano, leads an EVE online alliance, and advocates for transgender rights. Liz has been an SRE at Google for more than 8 years and has recently become a manager. Next up is Harrison Fisk. Harrison works for Facebook. He's been a manager and director of production engineering at Facebook for the last 4 years, primarily focusing on online data domain. Prior to managing, he spent a few years as an engineer at the data performance team. Before joining Facebook, he was an early employee at MySQL AB. He's co-authored a book, MySQL Clustering, and holds a Bachelor's of Science in Computer Science from the University of Buffalo. We have Nina from LinkedIn. Mushiana. Nina gave a great talk about transformation just before, and she is the production SRE and NOC manager at LinkedIn. She's been at LinkedIn for the past 3 years. And then finally, we have Kevin. Kevin has been director of site reliability engineering at LinkedIn for 4 years, primarily focusing on the data services. A native to the Bay Area, Kevin has been in the technology industry for 17 years and managed for 9 years. Kevin is passionate about building high-performance teams and services, tooling, and automating everything.
My team asked me to put a good quote in there talking about Big Kevin and some other things. I took that out for you. So
great. Anyways, thanks. All right. So when I became a manager, one of the first things that happened to me was that people started calling me less than a whole person. And I'm not sure I knew what that meant right away. But in terms of headcount calculations and other things, the managers are typically divided out. So my question to the panel is, I think a big part of this is people assume that managers in general aren't necessarily technical. And once you become a manager, you're sort of given a pass as to whether or not you have to do technical work anymore. Are you technical? What sort of technical work do you do? And are we actually whole people?
I'll take that question. So I'm actually a tech lead manager. So I manage what is a growing team of currently 7, soon to be 10 people. And right now, at kind of managing 7 people, I find that I have the time to make design decisions, to write a little bit of code, to analyze how are we doing. But I kind of don't necessarily do the day-to-day coding on projects quite as much as I used to. But I still definitely do a lot of the design work and do a fair bit of kind of crunching the numbers to figure out where do we need to improve, what are the major areas to improve on.
My name's Kevin Crow, as you said earlier. I'm actually a director. My organization's roughly about 90 to 100 people, so I don't do any technology work at this point. I am very technical. I enjoy doing technology. My happiest day is the day that I'm not actually having a meeting and I'm doing some coding. But those days are very, very few these days. But at LinkedIn, we are very technically driven managers. You have to pass the same technical bar as you would as an SRE in order to become a manager. So we value technology. You need that in order to make right decisions. I enjoy having deep down conversations about, let's say, GC tuning performance analysis and other things along those lines. So technology is very important. You understand you can make the right decisions.
And how important is it that you keep up to date with current technologies? What do you do to stay current and with the rapidly changing technology industry?
Sure, I can take that. So I'm also a director, so I have a pretty big organization as well. But being technical is very important, as everyone has said. So part of this is learning from people. So I spend a lot of time in meetings, as I alluded, but most of those meetings are actually just learning and getting more context, figuring out where our problems are, what are the technical solutions we need to move towards, and so on. Ultimately, though, most technical decisions, I believe, shouldn't be made by managers. Engineers are definitely empowered at Facebook to do a lot of the decisions directly.
Did you say should or should not be?
The engineer, so managers should not be making the technical decisions. And so we empower engineers, so while we're there to understand and help guide things, I mean, ultimately decisions are left in the hands of the engineers, so we definitely need to be able to understand all the technology and discuss it. We don't necessarily have to be 100% experts because we shouldn't be the ones making the decisions.
Okay. Where do you spend most of your time in addition to, what are all these meetings for?
I'll take this question. Currently, I have a team of 18 people. So most of my time goes in managing them, in guiding them. And those meetings, as a manager, I think you have to find a good balance of keeping up with what the current projects are, but also thinking ahead where the team's going to go next. And that's where most of those meetings are.
Completely echoing Nina, basically, meetings are generally for steering away from the rocks. Where are the rocks going to be? How can we avoid them? Like, it is much better to spend time talking to people in order to avoid problems down the road where you find out that the feature about to launch is going to bring down the system, or that two things that are launching are going to overload things. Right? These are problems that you can avoid by communicating early, communicating often. And I view it as part of my job as a TLM to take the burden off of my team from having to have a ton of meetings so that they can focus on doing good technical work and I can just make sure that they're pointed in the right direction.
How do you share bad news with your teams?
Very carefully. No, bad news is always something you have to do as any type of leader does. What you try and do is spend time early in the process to involve everybody you can in terms of the bad news. You make that decision of the bad news a part of a larger organization that everybody's involved in making that bad decision. That's what I've found that works the best for me. So.
Management decisions are not immune to postmortems.
Does that contrast with how you share good news with your organization?
Good news, let's see. So good news for me, I will usually let other people give the good news. But fundamentally though, decisions are not made in a vacuum. And that's something that's very hard to get through engineers' minds. For example, at LinkedIn right now, there's been some tough conversations around changing specific team names and working through any of those challenges we have today with that. So hopefully in the end, the decision that was initially bad news becomes good news for the team and we can all move forward. That was a very manager response, wasn't it? I didn't actually answer the question, did I?
I think the important thing about both bad and good news is explaining to people why. Transparency is probably the most important thing you can do as a manager, because otherwise people are going to think you're arbitrary, you're capricious, and that you're being unfair fundamentally.
Good answer. Thank you.
So what did you want to be when you grew up?
Do you want to do this one?
Good point.
Sure. So I want to be a carpenter. I'd actually always resisted going into management for a long time. So some of my previous jobs.
Just answer the question.
Okay. So I was perfectly content being an engineer for a very long time. And that's what I wanted to do until I got convinced otherwise. But I'm now happy and excited that I took that change.
Do you mind if I answer? So I never wanted to be a manager, because who in life wants to be a manager? You're a half a person, right? So fundamentally, what happened for me was roughly 11 years ago, I had a manager who had me mentor someone. And when I started mentoring someone, I realized that I actually had a lot to offer, which was kind of shocking for me at the time. And I realized that at that moment, I enjoyed teaching people. And that's a lot of what management is teaching people and empowering people and helping them get to the next level of their career, opening doors for them and what you need to do. So yes, I never thought I'd be a manager. Here I am.
I wanted to do a lot of things, but manager wasn't one of them.
So when I was growing up, I definitely knew that I wanted to be an engineer. And then I also realized that I liked working with people a lot, that I understood people really well, that I had a lot of compassion, and that I could really have a much larger impact by becoming a manager, in addition to continuing to tech lead.
Are you all happy with your choice day to day? So we're all managers here. I personally grapple with whether or not that was a good decision every day, but there are some really high highs and some really low lows. What about you?
I'm very happy. I think every day I'm able to make a difference in someone's career. I'm able to guide someone. I'm able to show someone the skills that they don't know they have. So I'm very happy with the choices I've made.
Yeah, I think I'm more similar to you that way. So there's obviously really good parts about being a manager. But at the same time, there's definitely some negatives. Things like, you know, having to manage performance, manage someone out of the company, those sorts of things. Like, I don't think anyone enjoys that. Like, no one wakes up and says, hey, I really want to go let someone go today. But ultimately, you need to make, you know, the organization stronger, better, and things like that. So, like, it's part of the job. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely times like that, like, you kind of question, like, what you're doing and if it is, like, what you like to do. And so the other part of this, too, is being an engineer, you get a much more immediate satisfaction. So, like, you can build things, you can deploy them, you can see things, metrics, charts change, all those sorts of things. Most management things are actually much more long-term than that, so you don't actually see impacts for 6 months, a year, 2 years, or whatever it may be, but it takes a long time to set a lot of these things in motion. So it's definitely trade-offs there, particularly at the beginning of management when you first start, like, because you don't have that kind of pipeline of things you've started, it really does kind of, is much harder that way. You don't see any gratification.
And for people, so I know when I was just starting as an IC, there were a lot of people that tried being managers and then sort of cycled back into being an IC. Can you talk a little bit about what that's like at respective organizations?
Sure. So at Google, actually, individual contributors are allowed to become managers if they want to without permanently committing to managing. So it gives people an opportunity to try it out with mentorship and with guidance. And if they like it, great. And if they don't like it, they can return to being individual contributors. So it's kind of a really useful thing. I'm actually, when I say I'm a TLM, that I'm on the individual contributor track. So if I wanted to, I could go back to being an individual contributor. Like, so far, I've really liked it, though. And in general, kind of having that graceful path means that people don't wind up being shoehorned into being managers and getting stuck, because that's the worst possible thing for a team. If you have a manager that doesn't want to manage, then the team's going to suffer.
Also, to add to that point, it works the same at LinkedIn. We open opportunities for people to start. And to your point you made just a moment ago about putting somebody in a role they don't want to be long term, that's just detrimental to a team. So it's really important that in any company you allow people to get in there slowly, get comfortable with it. It is a major career change for people, so it's tough, but yes.
Yeah, and so Facebook's the same way. We have career tracks all the way up that are parallel, so you can actually switch from management to IC and back again if you really decide to. They are different skill sets, so just because you're a successful IC doesn't mean you're going to be a successful manager and vice versa. So it's something where you can try it out, see how it goes, and then decide, okay, this doesn't work for me, and I'll go back. And that's actually one of the reasons I actually tried management originally. I'd always said I would never try it, but because there was the flexibility there, it kind of hooked me, and then I decided, okay, this is actually something I like to do, and then I was able to continue from there.
And one advice I always give, and that was given to me, is one should be a manager for the right reason. It does require a lot of patience. Never become a manager because of power or more money. It does require a lot of patience, and it's a different skill set.
There is no more money in management. Let's be clear, the levels are the same. No, definitely for the right reasons. Otherwise, it's a disaster.
So I think there's a lot of people who sort of think about being managers day to day. What would you say to them to sort of bring them into this opportunity and take that risk? Because it does feel like a pretty big risk for a lot of people.
If you want to get involved with it, the first thing I recommend you do is what I usually do is get started somebody with a summer intern from college. Those works perfectly. You can screw them up and they just go away. It's perfect. They become someone else's problem. Like, why not? You know. So, no, it works out really well. They get to see in that 3 month span or 2 months or whatever. They get to see if they really really want to do this. And if they do, they're crazy enough to move forward with that. You start moving forward with maybe giving them one report. And then they kind of really see, is this something that you want to do? And you don't change titles. You maybe have them report to them. I also start with mentorships. They start mentoring people. I actually talk to the person that they're mentoring to make sure they're not giving them bad advice. But yeah, fundamentally, you got to start small and start working your way up and always feeling comfortable throughout the process. But you have to look for certain cues, like someone has high emotional intelligence. Has the capability of defusing difficult conversations, and you know has like the capabilities of being someone who could manage down the road. So that's what I look for.
Okay, switching topics a little bit. One of the things that I would like to hear is in a high stress environment, which is SRE, there's a lot of firefighting, a lot of incident management, a lot of late nights. How do you keep work-life balance fair and keep people ultimately happy so they stay in the role?
I don't think there's a work-life balance in SRE world. There isn't. But the best efforts are being made. One advice I was given by my mentor is to make sure that you always pace my meeting. So I have 5 minutes to think about the previous discussion I came from and then also can think about the next discussion I'm going into. Second, I try to book my time. So after certain hours, I will not be working. That will be my family time. That will be my time. Those are best efforts, but it's a constant challenge that we have to face.
So I think in terms of that question, a lot of that is kind of answered by the excellent talks that we've had here from Lex and Courtney or from Dave Dash about, you know, how do you manage burnout on your team? And I think that the best, like, obviously do that, but also the best thing I can do as a manager is to set a good example. So for instance, people know that I go home. People try to not bug me after hours, and I don't try not to send people mail after hours. That's thing one. Thing number two is making sure that you keep an eye on the metrics of your team. Are you getting paid to death? If so, don't just let it happen. Just do something about it. It's your responsibility as a manager, or else your team's just going to leave, and that's really sad.
The other thing I'll just add here real quick, sorry, I like to talk, is you try and give gaps, as Nina said, in times between meetings so you can think a little bit more and try and foster that with your team not to do back-to-back. But also, you have to look at your resources. This is any manager has to do this. They have to look at the resources they have and figure out what they can reasonably do. If they can't do everything that such and such product team wants them to do, you have to push back. You have to set reasonable schedules and deadlines for your staff. Otherwise, they're going to quit, as you said. Yeah.
Do you feel like there is recognition in the organization for the firefighters?
You have to be very, very careful. You don't want to create hero complexes. Creating a hero complex is the worst possible thing you could do because it incentivizes people to continually set themselves on fire. Yes, it is important to reward when someone did a good job, but also you should make sure that it isn't a constant stream of firefighting by looking at what's going on. You have to keep your eyes open.
Yeah, so within Facebook, we also kind of have concepts of different types of people. So some people actually love firefighting or love debugging things, and so we'll actually try to focus them towards roles where that's a much more common thing. Then you have, you know, builders, and you have optimizers and things like that, and so it's definitely tailored to the individual, but we do openly recognize that some people are really good at debugging and love doing that and would do that all day if they could. So we try to set them up, and it's definitely a recognized thing within Facebook.
If people would like to come up to the microphone at any time and ask questions, please interrupt me.
Hi, I'm Kasky. I wanted to be a race car driver. As managers, I'd like to know, how do you measure and evaluate the performance of your directs in terms of career progression? And how do you evaluate your team?
Sure, so I can take this first. A big thing here is SRE, PE, Facebook is definitely a different role than SWE. And so one of the things that we've done is this is one of the reasons we actually have a completely separate organization. So PEs get evaluated and compared and calibrated with other PEs. And so it becomes very easy when you actually have a larger pool of people to compare and see, okay, the impact this person is having compared to other ones. Obviously, a lot of things go into this, you know, the level of the person, there's expectations we define, what you're expected to do. But obviously, it's a matter of looking at, you know, what they're doing, the impact they're having both on their immediate team, nearby teams, all of those sorts of things go into figuring out how things are going.
So I think there are a number of dimensions to this, one of which is obviously really good calibration of looking at what other SREs are doing. But the other dimension of which is kind of making sure that people are growing, that they're following a growth curve. So basically, to start with, like, can I give someone a well-defined problem and can they execute? And then can someone design the solution to a well-scoped problem? And then can someone tell me what are the problems I'm going to have a year from now, 2 years from now? And that's kind of the growth in skill sets that we expect to see from people, and that we can give people products that stretch them and kind of help them grow. And that's kind of really how we guide people.
At LinkedIn, we have a quarterly goals that everyone sets. So we look at if the individual was able to accomplish those goals. And not only that, the how much really they targeted for. Was it over the scope that can they really accomplish, or was it over that scope? So how well they know their own boundaries, and how well they were able to accomplish those, and what are the learning lessons from there? Another thing we see is that how well they are impacting their team as well as other teams. If they're good at something, how they have impacted their internal team by mentoring them or other teams. So we do a 360 view of my perspective, their peers' perspective, and their sister team's perspective.
One other thing I'll quickly add is that impact is not necessarily technical. There are many different forms of impact, and it's especially important to reward people for doing community contributions, for doing things that increase the diversity of the organization. And if you don't reward those things, you're going to have a very same-looking organization that doesn't function as effectively as one where you do reward community contributions and diversity.
Kevin, you wanted to say something?
No. You guys did a wonderful job. Thank you.
Next.
So with what you're just saying about impact, that kind of leads into a question I had, which, you know, Kevin mentioned emotional intelligence, soft skills are what makes for a good manager. Those are the same things that make for a good candidate for, like, depending on what you call them, like level fours, level fives, distinguished engineer, principal engineer, whatever you want to call them within your organization. You need that exact same thing. So when should you go into one path versus the other? When would you mentor somebody to go down one road versus the other?
Yeah, that's a fantastic point. Yeah. Thank you for calling that out. It is very true that as you go up in your career, you have to collaborate. You have to have high emotional intelligence. It doesn't matter what the role is. But really kind of comes down to is do they like teaching? Do they like having the hard conversation that Jill hates Johnny and Johnny hates Jill and trying to figure that out? And as a leader, I've found I have the conversations. And then what I said earlier, I send the intern in. Like, I'm really serious. Like, that works very well, and they get to see is do they like this? And if they don't, and they just love technology, there is that path, right? And you work with them to open doors and guide them where they want to be in their career. But it's fundamentally up to them. It's a fantastic point. Thank you.
Next question.
Hi. So my manager went and got himself promoted recently, so I'm probably going to be having a new manager sometime soon with my SRE team. And that could be someone who maybe hasn't specifically been an SRE before, but has been in a similar job function. I wonder what you as managers would appreciate if you were coming in to manage a new team, either within your organization or coming from an external sort of hire. What would make your life easier from your individual contributors to get you being a functional, useful-feeling manager as quick as possible?
Liz?
Sure. So one thing that is really, really important for new managers starting on a team is gaining the trust and confidence of that team. So one thing that we've done at Google is to have every single new manager spend 6 months on that team as an individual contributor before they manage anyone on that team. And that really helps with, you know, no, my manager's not a bozo. Like, they actually have worked with me on this project. They understand what it's about. They understand what they're doing.
I will agree with that. It is very important to understand the work that your team is doing. Only then you can know their challenges, and then you can help fix those. One concept that I always believed was that the manager works for the team. It's never the other way around. And the team needs to feel that.
So I think you also, what we didn't touch on here was, how can you help your manager? Right?
Yeah, exactly.
And fundamentally, it's just be open and honest. A lot of times, specifically for me, people are afraid to tell me what's on their mind. And that is immensely frustrating for me, because all I want to do is help them. It takes a while to kind of get people to open up. But if you open up very quickly, that manager will appreciate that. So, because that's fundamentally what they want to do. And if it's not, I don't know who you work for, but you probably want to find another job. So, by the way, LinkedIn's higher.
All right, thanks, guys.
Just to get this out of the way, is anyone at the table not hiring?
Sorry.
Next.
Hi. Thanks for the inputs and insights so far. The question I have is, how, in your experience, how do you, or what are the similarities and differences between managing an SRE team versus managing, say, a development team or a QA team or any other teams out there?
Don't look at me. I'm a line manager in SRE.
So I'll say, managing QA I've never done. I've managed some small SWE worlds. And fundamentally, the end goal is the same. We all want things to be up. We all want things to meet deliverables of the product. And we all want to make lots of money on stock. So fundamentally, there is a difference in how you interview, obviously, as you're indicating, and also how you manage their future career paths, which I feel is fundamentally probably the most challenging piece of that. And I struggled immensely in the SWE world trying to help these people move forward in their careers. And part of that was I didn't have the connections to make that happen in the company I was at, and it was much earlier in my career. But for me, that was probably the toughest piece, is just helping them grow. But I think managing them and doing the right thing was pretty standard that you would do in any industry. So.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Hey, I'm one of those people who changed from being a manager to an IC. So I had a question, something related. A few days back, I read a very interesting blog post which said that there's this persistent myth, or I don't know, assumption that people have in this profession, that you basically work on the line for a while and then the natural progression is to become a manager. Whereas the thing is that what people are not aware is that it's a completely different job description. Right, where the pieces are no longer technology, it's people, and they behave in much less predictable way than technology. So what would you like to comment on that? Do you agree to that? Is that a persistent sort of a bad, wrong impression given in the industry?
Yeah, I mean, so it definitely depends on the company. I think all the companies up here strive to make sure there is a career path to be a pure IC all the way up, right? Like, we have some very high-level ICs that are equivalent to, you know, VPs and higher within Facebook. These are obviously very senior engineers that can do all sorts of things, but they just don't want to actually take the management route. And we completely support that, and we want you to pick the proper way. But I have worked at companies in the past where that wasn't true. I was an IC and I reached the highest level, and we had lots of discussions. They're like, you need to become a manager, and I said no. So they started inventing new levels, things like that. But like at the same time, you need to make sure you have the organizational structure, and certain companies are definitely really good at this one, but a lot of the more historical ones definitely are not.
Thank you. Kevin?
Sandeep works in my organization, so technically, I think, just to say, I do think in older tech, that is a very true statement. And I think this the companies that are represented here understand that and see that and want to move forward with providing career paths because, as I've seen, is a manager, or excuse me, is an IC who didn't want to be a manager but became a manager, and I reported them, I hated my life because that manager sucked and needed to go away. So, you know, fundamentally, there needs to be a path for both. And if a company doesn't have it, they need to create it because or not promote people, or they're going to start losing people. So it's important that they have that path to move forward.
Thanks.
Hey, I just wanted to ask you, you've talked about this before, just wanted to get some details. How did you create the environment where your ICs could move between management and back, or from SRE back to SWE, or back and forth? And, you know, especially in a traditional corporate environment, how did you convince the rest of the business of that? And, you know, how did you do that with requisitions, backfills, all of that fun?
Yeah, I mean, so the biggest thing to me is having the cultural acceptance that managers aren't, like, more powerful than ICs. It's really just a different role. So, like, switching from a manager back to an IC isn't, like, a downgrade or something like that. And so we do a lot of cultural things and a lot of even rules things to enforce this. So, for example, when someone actually transitions from IC to manager, we always do a straight transition. You never comes with a promo as well. And so we actually ensure that they're literally always identical. And so there's no cultural bias against, oh, managers make all the decisions, are more important or something like that. And so we empower the ICs to do a lot of that. And so that way you can switch back and forth. And that's really the big thing, I think, that's been enforced in our culture.
Speaking briefly about the, instead of the manager to IC thing, that you were also asking about people going back and forth between software engineering and site reliability engineering.
Right.
Basically, the way to make sure that works is to make sure that you are having the same interviewing standards as the software engineering organization. So there's not kind of this resentment of, oh, you know, SREs are like less technical. No, we're equally technical. The interviews are the same, right? There's a slightly different specialization, but they're just as hard. We're just as competent. Our promotion processes, again, like we look at software engineers, we look at site reliability engineers, we look at impact. We kind of don't really have this notion of they're distinct and they're moving in opposite directions. Like a lot of SRE is writing code, building projects, doing designing, and that's kind of stuff that's shared in common that you can unify.
So I think that's a great point that you bring up, actually. Are SREs equivalent in all of your organizations in terms of, like, can they laterally transfer? Are they perceived as equivalent within the organization? I know that the stigma sort of goes both ways. In some organizations, being an SRE is more prestigious, and other organizations, it's less prestigious. But on average, we, I think, strive for parity.
Yeah, so I mean, as far as interviewing, all that stuff goes, I mean, it's obviously a different skill set. I mean, there's a lot of overlap between them. As you said, we do a lot of coding, things like that, but we test for additional things. You know, we test for, you know, systems knowledge, networking, all of those sorts of things. A lot of it will actually depend on how much exposure SWEs have had to production engineers. So certain parts of the company have actually worked very closely with production engineers. In many cases, the SWEs actually think it's almost like a superior role. Like they do everything we do and have all this magic system knowledge. Whereas other parts of the company, they don't even know production engineering really exists as a thing. So it definitely requires a lot more explanation. And some of them may have a lesser feeling about production engineering just because they haven't been exposed to it.
At LinkedIn, our SREs and our engineering teams work very closely together. In fact, our embedded SREs, they are even placed next to their engineering teams. So they work on the same projects. There's a lot of exposure towards each other. So it's a lateral move if they want to just switch their role and see how the other team's performing. It's considered lateral. No one's above the other one.
Right, right. And the question is, how do you keep that fluid with all the, you know, all the paperwork and all the admin that comes with it, backfills, requisitions?
So, for example, if a SRE would like to transition as an engineering, we do that. We are a project first. That doesn't require any transitions. But if someone wants to make them move permanent, then the managers can sort out the rec and transitions happen.
As an intern, I'm very happy my manager hasn't screwed me up.
Yet.
Thanks. You had a question about SRE managers joining a new team. How about junior SREs joining a new team? Do you have any recommended steps for them to take?
It's a great question.
You should have came to Nina and Mike Kehoe's talk yesterday about entry-level talent and bringing them in. So Nina, why don't you handle this one?
For junior SREs, it's very important, first of all, don't think that you're less than others. You bring your own talent, you bring your own strength to the team. Second, always look up to those mentors, someone in the team, or even the lateral team that they can guide you. That could be a manager or someone else in the team. But one thing I've seen in ELTs or entry-level talent is that they often feel that they don't know much, they need to ask others. Asking others is good, but have that confidence in yourself too.
Nice line.
Thanks.
So one of the things that seems like it's often not necessarily unique but fairly common for SRE is that you're putting people like on the front lines that often need to make important decisions like as quickly as possible in order to get an incident, stop the bleeding or whatever. What teams do you have on creating a safe environment for people to make those kind of snap judgments, even when they're not far up the totem pole?
Do you mean, will I get fired if I reboot this machine today?
That's probably an extreme example, but being able to make those calls and not feel like they're gonna get stuff coming down on their head for it.
Yeah, so one of the things that we definitely do at Facebook is we have a very blameless environment. So to make sure that like, hey, even our incident incident review system, things like that, is very much a blameless thing. So we come in, try to go over what happened, how you came to that decision, was there something flawed in what you were doing? But it's definitely like not a blame thing. And we even have a culture kind of around this as well. Facebook for a long time basically had the move fast, break things. Was actually one of our company mantras, an SRE that made me cringe, but that's okay.
What is that mantra now?
Move fast with stable infra.
For the studio audience, would you state the less PC version?
What's that?
Slow down and fix your shit.
Yeah, slow down and fix your shit. Yeah, sure. Again, it goes back to making sure you have a culture of this, right? Like, if you come in and people actually wear the, hey, I caused the Sev 1 and took down Facebook with a badge of honor, like, it's definitely helps people move faster, take those risks, and understand the repercussions that don't exist.
I can actually tell a story about that. So in the beginning of January, I went to Dublin to meet some of the new people on the Dublin team. And one of them had started 2 weeks before. And I basically sat down with her and showed her a postmortem and said, we're going to go through this postmortem so that you understand, right? Like, we don't penalize people for making mistakes. We try to learn from them. If you expose a flaw in the system, congratulations. We'll fix the flaw, and everyone will be better off for it.
LinkedIn has a similar culture. We believe that we should target the problem, never the person. And that's the same motto we use for every postmortem, for every incident.
Thanks.
There's been an ongoing theme of reluctant leadership or reluctant management. What do we need to change to make that not happen in the future?
Can you restate the question?
I've been talking to people around here and even the panel. There's been a theme of people not wanting to be managers or not wanting to be leaders. What do we need to change to, I guess, make that stop happening in the future?
Management is at least 50% emotional labor. Reward emotional labor.
And so I actually want to tease your question apart a little bit. You said, how do you get people to take on management and then leadership? Those two things are actually separate, in my opinion. You can actually definitely have leadership with an IC. Right, and so manager is just, again, going back to the thing, like, it's more of a, do you want to solve people or do you want to solve technical problems? And it definitely does take a certain type of person that wants to do that. And I definitely know, hopefully we're finding the people that want to do this. I think most people are scared of it, though, and so it's a matter of creating the culture where people are willing to take that risk to try it out. And then after they've tried it out, they realize, okay, this is actually pretty awesome. I'm good at it. I like it. And so then it's a matter of doing that. And so that's why we try to develop this no-risk environment where you can take that chance, try it out. If it doesn't work out, no problem. Go back, continue where you were in a safe environment.
I think that brings up an interesting point, which is managers are human. Managers will make mistakes. Your manager, I promise, is not an inhuman monster, right? Like, so it's important to give people the room to make mistakes and learn from them. Obviously, if someone makes a bunch of mistakes, fails to learn from them, poisons the team, they shouldn't be managing anymore. But people make mistakes, and that's how you learn. So give them that space, and you'll have a lot more people willing to manage.
Yeah, but also to add to your point, too, is managers are human, and all their actions are in this glass bowl that everybody's looking at them from the side, from down, from up. And sometimes, you know, if you report to a manager who's making mistakes, you have to understand that and maybe tell their manager's manager that to help them out. But yeah, by the way, to the point you made, there was fantastic, like breaking up leadership and whatnot. But you have to talk about what you want as a person. You have to tell your manager. We don't read minds, obviously. So if you want to get into either people management or technical leadership, you have to say that. And I guarantee your manager will open doors for you. So.
Managers are people too.
Yes, they are.
The other thing I had was, what, I guess, qualities would you look for in SRE managers distinct from maybe a software engineering manager? There's definitely things in common. I'm just more curious about, you know, personality traits, things they do on a more day-to-day basis, that kind of thing.
So the biggest thing I'd say there is, I mean, in general with SREs too, is you need to be able to be calm under pressure. SREs are typically, you know, the ones involved in firefighting, you know, fixing sites when they're down, all those sorts of things. So we definitely want to make sure that there's a definite level of calmness and understanding of that. And the second part of that, we do a lot of working with other partner teams. So a lot of software engineering can be very single kind of focused on one problem, whereas within production engineering, it's almost always a cross-team, cross-functional thing. So the ability to network and to understand partner teams and all the needs across everybody is definitely a really big thing that we look for within our managers.
Just one more point. So I interview a lot of SWE managers because we want to make sure that as a team in a specific area that everybody can work closely and we all give the thumbs up. One of the things that I look for, which is a very biased thing on my end, is I look for the culture of understanding side up. So I try and kind of tease that out of them. Have they worked in an area where they're in a back-end reporting world? They don't really care about, you know, side up. Given the fact that I deal with heavy online data serving, for me, I'm very worried that, you know, they're going to be out to lunch and not care when we have a major thing on fire. So that's what we tend to look for the culture within LinkedIn.
Thank you very much.
Hi. You've talked a lot about how you make your employees better, but I'm wondering how or what strategies you use to make yourself better at managing and how you see your own career sort of progressing up that management track to director and that sort of thing.
So I have a really fantastic mentor. The person who is my manager is, I'm so happy that I've been working with him. Basically, anytime that I have a question about, you know, what should I do in this situation, or here's my intuition, can you double check that? He's been really amazing and wonderful. So having a great mentor is helpful for growing as a manager. The thing that he does, that my manager tells me though, is that a lot of things with management can only be learned by going through them. And unfortunately, we don't really have dirt for people management. The closest thing actually is EVE Online. I have, true story, I have fired the person who used to be my boss in EVE Online. But yeah, basically, it's something you only learn by doing. So sometimes you just have to wait and deal with situations as they come up. But personally, I actually don't see myself becoming a director, right? I see myself as a tech lead manager, and in an ideal world, I would be leading a super experienced team of like 6 or 7 people and teaching new people along the way as well.
I try to follow my own advice, which is communicate with my manager and my mentor. So my mentor, he's right here, and my manager is right there in the audience. That's what I did. I communicated to them when I had just a knock in a team, And I told them that I'm looking for next challenge. And because I was communicating them, they both worked with me, gave me that career path, and today I'm SRE manager. I think the same, just follow your own advice.
Yeah, and so to build on that too, like, I mean, having a set mentor is great, but I also will go out of my way to reach out when I see other managers do something. Like, if I see some tricky team transition or tricky people management issue they dealt with, I'll actually reach out with them and then set up, you know, a half hour meeting to actually chat with them and be like, hey, how did that go? What did you think about? Those sorts of things. Turns out managers like to talk about themselves. And so... And so
you do it too.
Yeah, I know.
So do I.
And so it works out okay. But it's a matter of learning from experience, as everyone said.
Hi there. Probably this question can be controversial, but I want to try to be. I want to know that is there any criteria of an age, like the manager has to be a certain age or something? Because what happens is, so let's say sometimes a manager is managing a team, which the whole team is probably older than the manager, or maybe say they're too young for that. How you, like, so you guys are pretty successful managers, so what are the things you guys do to reduce the friction or make it very fluid for the team not to feel that any kind of criteria in that sense? So that's why I said too many words, because I didn't want to make it controversial that you're talking about.
I love controversial questions. So the short answer is no, there is no age bias. It's all about experience. You look at Facebook, I'll use you guys as an example. Look at Mark Zuckerberg. He's a young kid, wears a blue hoodie. I have lots of blue hoodies, hoping to be like Mark at one point in my life. No, but it doesn't matter. It matters how mature they are, how they can handle themselves, how they can read people, how they handle tough situations, and how they navigate them. So I will say I haven't seen someone who's right out of school who's ready to manage. I've been in this only about 17 years, so I have more years to go, but I haven't seen that. But you know, I have... I like to identify talent who has never managed before and help develop them. I have many people in my organization today. No, there's no age bias. And by the way, I'm technically representing LinkedIn, so I can't say there is if there was, but no, there's really not, so bad joke.
I think that I am more concerned about the opposite form of age bias. But definitely, it is a requirement to have the technical respect of your team, and the best way to earn the technical respect of your team is to work alongside them. As long as you have that, then they will respect you, and everything will be fine in that department.
Any more questions from the audience? I can walk a mic out to people.
So on the same type of theme as working alongside your team, What do you say about the situations where you've worked beside your team for a while? You may have created some kind of personal relationships with the people on your team, and then you move into being their manager. How difficult or easy is that?
Yeah, so this will depend a lot on the individual. So, like, imagine you have to manage out one of these people, or you want to have to deliver bad news in general to them. Are you going to be able to do that? I find that there's two people in the world, two types of people. Some people that can, that have no problem delivering hard feedback to even people they're pretty good friends with, and then other people that aren't. And so based on that, it's definitely a tough situation. In those types of situations, if we still think the person could be a good manager, but they have this friendship thing, we'll look at moving them to a new team for a shorter period of time, you know, maybe 3 months or something like that, where they can prove their technical ability, but not necessarily become, you know, best friends with people. But it definitely is. It really depends on the individual manager. Some people have a real big hookup with this, and other people don't.
Yeah, this is tough. It's tough. There's a couple areas of this I see a problem as well. Is one, if you have a manager who's now reporting to another manager who's their peer, that's a huge problem. I've actually have that going on right now in my organization, and it's about trying to really. Just be professional, be open, be direct, and why that person can help them grow. And then the other avenue, which I think you were referring to, is really around an IC who's being promoted to a manager. And an excellent point. If you have to move them out because it's not working, that's tough. But you know, for this new manager, you need to help them because they may feel the same way you do, which is just an awkward situation. And that may hold them back from giving feedback to, you know, the team to grow. So you have to, it's kind of give and take. It's both sides. So great question, though. Like, those are tough.
Thank you.
This will be the last question, I think.
I have this maybe irrational link in my mind between managers and salespeople and advertisers, which is that it's inevitably part of the job that you have to be in willfully dishonest. And I would love if you could, dispel that for me, that bias, as strongly as possible, or tell me if you can't, why not? And I realize the irony in asking you this question.
Do you want to buy a car? Can I sell you a car? Seriously.
There are cases in which you are not allowed to tell some people information that you know. It is difficult. It is part of the job. But it damages your credibility if you actively lie to someone. And if you tell people news as soon as you can and explain to them why you couldn't tell them before, that always does a great deal towards earning that trust. Yes, it sucks, but it is part of being a manager, is, you know, not spilling beans and everything. I heard Sue got a bad review, blah, 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 right? Like, no, you don't do that. That's unprofessional.
I think this ties back to one of the earlier things, which was, how do you deliver bad news? And the answer is delicately. Some of that has to be done in solitude, I think. Great. Thank you to our four panelists. We have Harrison, Liz, Nina, and Kevin. They took time out of their day to be here with you today. Really appreciate it, especially on the short notice. Thanks, everyone.